Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, when an environmental emergency occurs, who do you call to assist with managing your liability? First Call Environmental maintains 40-hour OSHA-trained personnel and specialized response equipment in over 20 locations throughout the eastern United States. From minor petroleum releases to overturned tankers, First Call is ready to respond 24/7. Call today and learn how the First Call difference can protect your company. Call 1-800-646-1290.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys, episode 290. I am Bobby Salas, and I'm here with Mike. Hi, Mike. So, full reveal, I'm trying a new microphone setup. And if you're watching the video version, which I highly recommend you going to our YouTube channel and subscribing to that, you're going to see a selection of our videos.
Yes.
Without the ads.
None of this is ad related.
Might be.
Unless somebody wants to pay us a lot of money to put the ads in, then you're going to see ads. Maybe.
Listen, my doors are always open. I'm always available to do it. But just to get the show off the ground, I have a feeling this is going to be a lengthy one because this is one of those ones where I would say I didn't think of it in that angle.
This is something – all right, so full disclosure for those that are listening. Very little about this topic. And we are learning about this topic literally in real time as we go along. So there will probably be multiple episodes on this. And we are going to do our best to try to kind of dive into it a little bit as we go along. But this is new for us. And so we are definitely not in any way, shape, or form experts in this field. But we're trying to figure out what is important to us in the hazmat community and what is not.
And we always try to keep you up to date with all of the conferences that are happening. We are finishing up. This is the last week of the Midwest Conference. Actually, we're finishing up as of this recording. Tomorrow is the final session with yours truly, doing with, I believe, Rick Emery at the Midwest Conference. And I had the pleasure of presenting at the Michigan State Virtual Hazmat Conference as well. That went over really, really well. I'm very happy with that one. But I think we're going back live. The people that are coming in the second half after the summer, they're all extremely confident that we're going to be going back live, which I'm
really
excited
forward
to.
You know, for it gets tedious flying and going and doing that, but you don't realize what an incredible benefit it is seeing people face to face and transferring the information. Like, you know, there's only so much that we can give in a podcast. There's only so much that we can give in a video. The face-to-face is just phenomenal. It has its place. It can be a great learning tool. It can be a great supplemental for learning. But nothing beats face-to-face.
I agree. So with all that said and done, let's get into
Yes.
Aerosols.
So let's give a little background on this. So
yes, please.
908 okay. Devices, which is
yes.
an incredible company, and we're just kind of saying this to give background because they do kind of like a webinar thing that has really, really good content. And they have really incredible people on the show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like me and you.
Right. So we did. We were panelists on one of their webinars, and
which are free, by the way. Just go to their website, I believe, and just sign up to be notified. They have an incredible webinar.
It's really
setup.
Good. And
once a month,
one of the things that I absolutely love about 908 is that they're the mass spec meter people, and they give like a holistic whole picture approach to metering, right? They never turn around and are like, this is the end all be all. They'll be like, this is what fits into your picture, and you should use this, and this in conjunction with this. So it's a really, yeah. they have a really good mindset. I really respect how they are, you know, how they're doing things. So we have no problem being like, listen, go watch their stuff.
And we got educated. I mean, the guy we were with was Dr. Mark Norman. Jeez, his son Gordon. And he is, you know, he's teaching us. And seriously, we were in education mode. We were in learning mode. And I'm sure this is that webinar that we were present on. I highly recommend you going and checking it out because you can see. You yeah. can see us kind of like,
and I was
oh,
like legitimately oh. reading the screen. Like he was doing slideshow presentations
like,
and like I caught myself a couple times really close to the screen. I'm like, oh, I need reading glasses, don't I? Like this is like all you see is my eyeball up near the screen. But it was really good. So he started diving a little into aerosols. So we were like, wow, we really don't know a whole lot about aerosols. We were both walked away having learned something. And Bobby was like, you know, there's clearly a lot more out there. Let's do a show on it. So that's what we ended up doing for today.
And if you think aerosols are like, meh, trust me, this is, I don't want to get too much into it because we're going to start right now, is like, you got to think about aerosols are almost at like the fourth yeah. phase of matter.
Yeah, well, and have you
so,
ever?
Let's go. Come on.
And I know you have, and I have too. Like peeled back something and realized like peeling back a poster on a wall and realizing there's a hole in the wall, and then you look into the hole and you're like, holy crap, there's a whole nother room back here. That's what's happening with aerosols right now. There is like this whole field of study.
Yes.
There are science journals specifically dedicated to the science of aerosols. So the least we could do is talk about it for
incredible.
A half hour. So what is an aerosol, right? That's kind of the dividing thing. Now, like I said, we're not experts on this topic. This is not something we're familiar with, but we're learning and you're learning with us. So we're actually going to take definitions right from Wikipedia. So some of the stuff we're going to talk about is going to be straightforward definitions. And a little word about Wikipedia, because I always turned around and was like, F Wikipedia, F, don't ever research off of Wikipedia. And I was personally corrected for saying that Wikipedia is a shitty resource for science-based stuff. And I was doing a class with a friend of mine right. In California, Jim Davis. And we've had him on the show before. And he, when I said it, was like, right in front of the class, he was like, actually, that's not true. And I was like, what do you mean that's not true? I'm like, any idiot can go on and put stuff on Wikipedia. So he's like, I have this white paper. And he actually showed me the white papers. Why he was carrying it with him, I have no idea. He's kind of creepy, but that's okay. And he was like, this white paper describes in really good detail how the science information on Wikipedia is extraordinarily accurate. And I was absolutely shocked. So although it seems like you can go in and change anything on Wikipedia, the trolls that are out there are really only doing it for like celebrities and stuff like normal people care
yeah.
about. Right.
Kim
they
Kardashian
really don't give a rat's
crap,
ass
like
about science stuff. So it kind of is actually really, really accurate.
All right. So with all that said, we're going to go into aerosols. Aerosol actually means it's an abbreviation for arrow solution, right? It's a suspension of fine solid particles or liquid droplets in air or in another gas. Now, aerosols can be natural or anthropogenic. Anthropogenic, I think that's how you say that word. Examples of natural aerosols are like fog and mist, right? Where we'd have water droplets in the air. And then if there's enough of them, as Mark said in the podcast, he said, you just, your headlights don't go through it. It kind of bounces and refracts off. So they could be forest, like geyser steam or whatever the hell else. The liquid or the solid particles have diameters less than 1 micrometer. Larger particles, geez. I'm not even,
that's
I
why.
Didn't even have anything to drink.
That's why. This larger, podcast is a two-drink minimum
I'm
for you.
I'm all gummed up. Oh my God. Larger particles with significant setting speed make the mixture a suspension, but the distinction
so
is not very clear.
So an aerosol includes both particles and the suspended gas. Now, usually this is air, right? And that's important because they go right together. There's some guy, Frederick, mm-hmm. Frederick Donnan, Dananen, me neither. He is dedicated or presumably the first to use the term aerosol. It comes from World War I when they were describing an air solution, basically clouds of microscopic particles in the air. And the term is kind of analogous to hydrosol or a colloidal system with the water as the suspension medium. So if you think about like mixing chocolate okay. milk, right, that is a colloidal system that is it's particles suspended in the milk. Primary aerosols contain particles introduced directly into the gas. Secondary aerosols form through gas to particle conversions.
You know, when you're out there facing the unknown, you want the MX908 in your toolkit. Now, it's packed with the sensitivity and selectivity of high-pressure mass spectrometry. This is a detection device that fits right in your hands. You can detect and identify chemical targets from street drugs to explosives and ticks to chemical warfare agents, including Novichoks, all with the same tool. The MX908 can detect and identify threats in any state and is now the only field tool available for real-time aerosol analysis. The MX908 gives you the rapid, actionable intelligence you need to make decisions faster and ensure the safety of everybody involved. To get more information about the MX908, including technical papers, video demos, and target lists, go to info.908devices.com/hazmat, and then hazmat is all in one word. With the MX908, you get real-time detection of real-time threats. Check it out at info.908devices.com/hazmat. Okay, so then I guess a primary aerosol would be more like the Krylon spray can with paint. No.
That's propelled.
Because that's propelled. And it's actually, I would say that maybe that's more of a secondary
aerosol.
So what
would be a
good aerosol?
Example of a primary aerosol? Do you think maybe like smoke would be a primary aerosol? Or is that generated?
I would say it's probably generated. I mean, I'm thinking
fog? Maybe
you
fog
might have to come
is
back
an example?
I don't know. Yeah, because it's a single product and it's part of the gas, right? So it would transfer with the gas medium.
Yeah. See, we are still learning about it.
Yeah. So various types of aerosols are classified according to the physical form and how they are generated, like dust, fumes, mists, smokes, and fogs, right? Those terms are actually different type of things. They all mean
so
different things.
Why do we want to know about aerosols? Because there is a danger to the first responder. And there's actually multiple dangers associated to the first responder with aerosols. So the primary danger, which is something that Mark talked about on the 908's webinar, is the primary chemical hazard. Since an aerosol is really just tiny right. chunks of an original substance suspended in the air, that tiny chunk still holds the same chemical and physical properties as it did when it was all one big puddle or one big pile. So let's take bulk.
Right, he called it bulk.
Yeah, the bulk properties. So let's take like, I don't know, what would be a good example? Sarin, all right? When sarin is released as a chemical warfare agent, it's kind of like sprayed. If it touches you, it's going to produce the same type of harm as if it was in a puddle and you touched it. Acid.
Right, but it has the properties of a gas. It can flow and conform to a room, fill a room.
So you have this now sort of like a, would you call it an enhanced vapor? Like if you could you think about it like an enhanced vapor?
Yeah. It's like in the middle. It's between a liquid and a gas. It's a really weird parameter because it holds the bulk properties.
So if we had a known aerosol in the air that was something with a low, like, because, right, a lot of times we're like, well, look at the vapor pressure. The vapor pressure is going to tell you whether or not the gas is in the air. Mm-hmm. But if you have an aerosol in the air and you know what that product is,
vapor pressure's out.
Then even if it has a low vapor pressure, it's now still a skin hazard because it's in the air acting as a gas.
Yes. And if you think about it like this, if it has a medium or even substantial vapor pressure, each droplet is like a mini hot zone. Right? Each, because we always tell everybody, if you increase the surface area, you enhance the vapor production. Well, if I take my liquid that has shitty vapor production, or even let's call it moderate, 25, we'll take water and I throw it up in the air, or let's go with acetone because we you know that has high vapor pressure. If I aerosolize acetone, it might not even make it to the floor before it's vaporized.
It might completely fall. Interesting. I didn't put this in the show notes as a description to talk about, but there is actually, when you have a really full room of an aerosol liquid, there's actually its own evaporation condensation cycle happening around the droplet. So as things are evaporating, depending on temperatures and things like that, some of it's condensing into new ones, the particle, as it's losing size, is gaining size as it evaporates, it condenses. So there's a lot of science behind liquid aerosols. It was really amazing.
Right, but the particle size was a major component of the discussion we had with Dr. Norman. It was, and he kind of locked it in a little closer. You know, particles that are concerned us are between 0.005 to 15 micrometers. Now, he was saying 2.5 to 10 is what the sweet spot of our concern, which is like, what was it? A human hair was 70 micrometers. It's micrometers equals a micron. You might hear this in filters, like your house filters or your N95 P100. Whatever it says, it can get down to like 3 microns, whatever that number might be. But the biggest thing is that it's like the lungs, right? The lungs is the whole respiratory tract, the nose, the mouth, the tongue, the esophagus, the trachea, the bronchus, the bronchioles, the alveoli, all these things, the smaller these things get, the deeper they can kind of wiggle their way into you. And the harder is to get out now.
Especially with the device that they were talking about, they measure between 2 to 10 microns.
2.5
to 10. So they have this kind of ability to take a swath of what is considered an aerosol. So we should always kind of understand how things harm us. When we talk about acids, we talk about the harm that they do. When we talk about radiation, we talk about the harm that they do. So it is not without reason to discuss the harm that the particles can do. And there are 4 major ways in which a particle can be deposited into your lungs. And the first one is called an interception. And this is when a particle is deposited, or it's considered intercepted when it is deposited, when it travels so close to the surface of an airway passage that the edge of the particle partially touches the surface. This method is most important for fibers such as like asbestos. So even asbestos in the air is considered an aerosol. It lands within that category. I know.
It's not what I think of.
The fiber length depends on where it's going to be intercepted. if they are 1 micrometer long and 200 micrometers wide, then they will most likely deposit themselves near the surface, near a 20 micron width than a 5 micron width. I'm not exactly sure what that is saying, that last little part, but it is basically, I believe what it's trying to say is, depending on the length and the width is going to be where, yeah, it's going to like hit in with certain areas. Now, the best way I can think of to talk about an interception is like if I'm walking down a freshly painted hallway and I happen to brush up against the hallway, I've now touched that surface and I'm going to get the paint on me. Or I'm going to disturb the paint. Like I'm going to mess up the paint, and I could possibly stick to the paint if it was, you know, something along those lines. So I think that's, you're talking about to a surface that something that's running parallel to the surface and then accidentally sticks to it.
Yeah, I get that one. Another one is going to be impaction. So impaction is an object in motion will stay in motion kind of thing, right? One of Sir Isaac Newton's first observations of matter and energy. So if you think of the particle as like a car, right? And we're flying along a straight, straight road. And then all of a sudden that road turns. If you're not watching yourself, you're going to hit that corner, right? So when our air and our lungs and our body gets to make those turns in our throat or our lungs, it wants to keep its trajectory straight. And that's where it kind of comes into contact with your body. So it could be deposited on various spots where change of the direction is occurring.
Now, if you think about the car analogy that you were given, the heavier the car, the harder it is to make that turn at that speed. So particles are no different.
Right.
The larger the particle, the quicker it's going to impact the curb in that turn. The first turns. So particles greater than 10 micrometers, they usually stay in the nose and the throat, and they don't go into the lower tissue of the respiratory tract. The same way a very heavy car trying to make a turn is going to hit that curb versus some light little, I don't know, Toyota Camry that's just flying through. It's going to be able to make the turn. The third is called sedimentation. All right, and this is kind of similar to interception, but instead of touching the sidewall of the body while it's moving, it does it as it's settling between breaths. So if you think about like sedimentation in a lake or a body of water, how things are floating in the water, and then as they kind of stop moving, they drop down. We're looking at the exact same thing with air being the medium and the particles being the sediment. This type of deposit is most likely found in the bronchioles and the bronchi, and they tend to be about 0.5 micrometers to 10 micrometers in size.
The last one is going to be your diffusion. This occurs in sizes less than 5 micrometers and gets deep down into the lungs. These are very, very fine particles. These are the particles that are so small, they just kind of hang out in the air and by chance hit up and stick to the side of the lungs. The one that kind of, and I'm sure I'm off on this, but one of the analogies we were talking about in the show was fentanyl. Now, I don't think fentanyl is all that small because of the property of the electrostatic and the electronegativity, actually like, almost like battery chargers, little jetpacks on these things, and they want to just hang out in suspension. These things are so small that they really, I don't want to say they're gravity free, but they're affected by gravity less, we'll say. They just don't want to go anywhere.
Kind of like hang out. If you look at dust, right? It could be a really calm day inside. The sun is shining through your window, and you're just like looking at little dust particles flying around. Even though there is no wind in your house or air movement, they're still just kind of chilling there. All right. So how do we know if an aerosol is dangerous? Besides the chemical properties of the substance, I don't really think there's a way of knowing for sure whether that specific aerosol is dangerous. I think we just have to assume that all aerosols are dangerous, and we should be trying to keep them out of our lungs. You were an ALS provider, right, Bob? All right. Did you ever do the autopsy rotation? All right.
Yeah.
When George Washington they cut University open the lung, awesome. George, is that in the city?
No, it was in.
Oh, in D.C. Wow, why were you all the way down in D.C. for that?
Because I'm cool.
All right, I'm not even going to ask. One of the things when we were doing the autopsies, when they cut open the lungs of people, they were able to immediately tell whether or not they were smokers, or whether or not they had lived in the city, just by the color of their lungs. And that comes from the inhalation right. of the smoke from the pollution and the cigarettes kind of like adhering to the inside of their lungs. Now, are those dangerous? Well, I don't think one breath of living in the city is going to necessarily kill you. One cigarette isn't going to kill you. But this is kind of one of those acute chronic things where we don't, you know, okay,
yes.
acute wise, you're probably going to be okay unless it's like a radiation thing, which we don't even talk about in this episode. But if it's not radiation and you're not talking about chemical physical properties, the acute part, I think you're going to be okay. It's more the chronic long-term effect of either having it in your lungs, because there are definitely aerosols like asbestos that all you need is one fiber and it can cause damage, or something like smoking where, you know, it's getting into your lungs and over a long period of time, there is just a buildup. And then, you know, you're dead. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you are a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.